Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Deploying Dragons by Dan Cobalt, narrated by Austin Rising. Chapter 1. The Missing. My first day back at Build a Dragon should have been a triumphant return. Part of me wondered if it was a dream. 6 weeks had passed since I'd left this building for the last time. My ID badge still worked to get me into the parking garage. I supposed that was something. Forget the grand return. If I'd had to park my Tesla in the guest lot, I wasn't going in. Simple as that. Going back felt weird. I'd gotten in earlier than usual, on purpose, because I didn't want to deal with any uncomfortable encounters. So I met no one as I walked into the sleek, steel-and-glass building and took an elevator to the 7th floor. Design and hatchery. On impulse, I took the shortcut through the hatchery proper, expecting that the cost might be dodging the ever-present egg carts and white-garbed workers. But no one was in there, and all but one of the hatching pods were empty. The sole occupant of the only active pod was a large egg with beige and black tones. Judging by the shape and size, it was a Rover model. I wondered how many we'd keep selling of those now that dogs were coming back. I moved on, tugging open the pressure-heavy door to the design lab. Anyone who walked into this part of the building couldn't help but notice the God Machine. The biological printer that produced viable dragon eggs was the only one of its kind. It was also massive. Minivan-sized, you might call it. The robotic arms hung still in the cool air of the lab, which wasn't all that unusual. Eggs printed quickly, and judging by the state of the hatchery, business had slowed. But I found no one sitting in the cubicle workstations that were arrayed like honeycombs around the bioprinter. The whole design lab was empty. Not a worker or a projection monitor in sight. Something's wrong. A strange, masochistic part of me speculated that they were all hiding somewhere, waiting for me like it was a surprise party. That would have been awkward enough. But at least it would have offered some explanation for the ghost town feel. I probably needed to go find Evelyn to learn what the hell was going on, but I couldn't resist the urge to sit down at my old workstation. It was strange how familiar it all was. The softness of my chair cushion, the cool metallic surface of the desk, and the faint metallic smell from the warm air rushing out from the computer servers that surrounded the God Machine. They were called Switchblades, and a photo of them in a magazine years ago was what had brought me to this place. Raw computing power was a valuable commodity in genetic engineering. The human genome alone had more than 3 billion base pairs. The dragon genome wasn't that large, but it was far more exotic. Lizards and amphibians and all manner of creatures had contributed DNA sequences to it. The thought of being able to engineer dragons again brought a thrill to my stomach. A new sound intruded over the steady hum of the machinery, a staccato of heeled shoes clacking on the tile floors. The frenetic energy of those footsteps made me smile. Evelyn Chang entered every room like she was running late for a meeting, which she probably was. She was a head shorter than me, petite, but not frail. She looked younger than her 39 years. She also wore a new power suit that fit her perfectly. As long as I'd known her, she'd found a way to exude an intimidating air of extreme competence. But she looked at me and smiled, and I found myself smiling back. "Noah Parker," she said. "Evelyn Chang. It's good to see you." "It's good to be here." I cleared my throat and glanced around. "Where is everyone?"
"I didn't want to overwhelm you on your first day."
"That's why it's a ghost town." I relaxed a little. "I can handle it, I promise."
We have a lot to talk about.
I know. I waved it off with a casual air. The tension was still draining away. Then I looked at her and saw how she'd pressed her lips together. Evelyn pressed her lips together in a certain way. I knew that look. What is it?
When I announced that you would be promoted to my old position, not everyone was pleased to hear the news, she said, seeming to choose her words carefully.
Who was displeased?
O'Connell felt that he should be the new Triple D.
Director of Dragon Design, she meant. It was the coveted title here, and the one she dangled in front of me to get me to come back. I nodded, hardly surprised. Brian O'Connell had been the senior designer when I joined the design department. He was a brilliant programmer and had written the code for our biological printer. Sometimes I think the design work chafed at him, though. He wasn't happy that Wong and I cracked domestication together, nor did he like it when I was tasked to design a replacement for his flying model, the pterodactyl, or terrible dactyl, as some had taken to calling it. O'Connell never gave me the time of day after that. I think he took it as a personal affront. He was here the longest, I said. You didn't want him for the role?
Brian is an excellent programmer, she said.
But not a leader was the unspoken end of that sentence. I hope you made the right call.
You are the right choice, Noah Parker. I have no doubts.
I tried to counter the flood of pride by reminding myself that hiring back the corporate whistleblower had plenty of PR advantages, too. Sorry it cost you a good designer.
Two good designers.
The frogman quit, too?
He told me I go if he goes, she shrugged. So he went.
Damn. I bit my lip. It shouldn't have surprised me, because O'Connell and the frogman were tight. Even so, it grated just a little. And with the frogman, we lost a lot of serious design expertise. He had a background in developmental genetics, in other words, how organisms developed before birth, and that knowledge had proven incredibly useful in designing some of our early models. What about Koropati?
She's taking some time off, given the recent events.
I see. That was a bit disconcerting, but it didn't sound permanent. Well, where's Wong? Andrew Wong worked in the cubicle next to mine, and he'd been my closest work friend when I'd been here before. He was a great sounding board, too. More than once, I'd thought about consulting him on what to do to prove my brother's mutation caused his disease, a necessary step to get him into gene therapy trials, but I hadn't wanted to put him at risk. He'd come here on a work visa that required a corporate sponsor. No one worked harder than he did.
Wong is back in China, Evelyn said.
Oh, hell. Until that moment, I hadn't realized how much I was looking forward to seeing the guy and his crooked grin. Voluntarily?
He went home to visit family. His sister was getting married.
I exhaled. You had me worried. The way she'd said back in China had made it sound like a more permanent thing, and something in her face made me concerned. When does he get back?
We are not sure.
Uh-oh. This was starting to sound more like one of those immigration horror stories. It actually surprised me that he'd taken the chance to go back. He really wanted to stay in the U.S. as long as he could. Is his family okay?
Yes, they are well, but he was not allowed to book a return flight.
I opened my mouth to say that we needed Wong and demand to know what she was doing about it. That's what the old hot-headed Noah Parker might do. But I was the director of Dragon Design now, so I should start acting like a leader. I forced myself to take a calming breath. I would like to help however I can. That was the last thing Evelyn expected me to say, based on the flicker of surprise that crossed her face.
That is very kind of you. So, what, did he have a problem renewing his visa?
His U.S. visa is fine, according to our contacts at the State Department.
But you said he might not be allowed to come here.
Correct.
I shook my head. I'm confused.
The U.S. is not preventing Wong from coming here, Evelyn said. China is preventing him from leaving.
They can do that?
Yes.
But why would they do that?
She shrugged. Any number of reasons. If he or any of his relatives were political dissidents or involved in criminal activities, or criticized the government in public.
You don't think that's it, though, do you? I asked.
No. I think it's not about Wong directly.
I felt like she was making me extract every bit of information by force, and I had to push down a wave of irritation. When she did this, it was because she wanted to test me, or at the very least, to teach me something important. So what is the undercurrent here? Wong was a really good guy, and he'd left his former laboratory in Shenzhen on good terms. And here Evelyn was saying she thought it wasn't about him at all.
They want something, I said. Yes.
Do we know what that is?
Not yet, but I have a call scheduled with them tonight.
Would you like me on it? She pursed her lips, and I could tell she was playing out some kind of mental chess match in her head.
Yes, if you don't mind. I think your participation might throw them off a bit.
Will they speak English?
If we ask them to.
Good. First day back and I was already in over my head, but I knew in my bones that whatever we were going to do, we needed Wong. Chapter 2. The Negotiation. Evelyn had set the call for 5 p.m., the end of our work day, and the start of China's. It was also the next day in Beijing, but I tried not to think about that. The globalization of time across the planet was a weird thing. It was hard to imagine how Wong could make trips back and forth while adjusting to the time difference. I'd spent the day resurrecting my permissions on Build a Dragon servers and clearing out the design queue. When I'd left the company, we had orders popping into the custom queue constantly. It signaled that the mainline models were selling well. Only a fraction of our customers ponied up the extra expense for customization. Still, I liked the challenge of it, of taking a customer's often ridiculous request and finding a way to make it work. Other than designing the occasional prototype, it was my only chance to do real engineering. 15 minutes before the call, I forced myself to log out. By impulse, my feet took me to Evelyn's office down the hall from the design lab. It was empty inside except for the desk and chair. Evelyn must have already claimed the CEO's office upstairs. The nameplate outside had changed, too. Now it read Noah Parker, PhD, on a framed placard with my title, Director of Dragon Design. 6 months ago, this was a coveted position in biotech. Now it meant leader of a team of effectively one. The office was still nice, at least. I took the chair and savored the way the leather enveloped me. Not to diminish the chairs in our design lab, but they simply didn't compare. Something about the material. It had the same texture of the driver's seat in my Tesla, which made it Napa leather. Pure luxury. Well, I wouldn't keep it long if I didn't start rebuilding the team. With that grim thought, I headed to the elevator. The C-suite of the Build-A-Dragon company naturally occupied the top floor of the company headquarters. I'd attended a few meetings in the executive boardroom, but had never seen the CEO's office. Entering it was like storming a castle. First, there were the outer doors, then a sort of antechamber with a small desk. If Greaves had had a secretary, he or she was no longer employed here. I skirted the desk and entered the inner sanctum, a spacious corner office that made mine look like a janitor's closet. Evelyn wasn't there, but she'd probably run in 30 seconds before the call. I admired her office while I waited. The outer walls were glass, floor to ceiling, and offered a spectacular view of downtown Phoenix. The only thing that obscured them were Evelyn's plants, all carnivorous species, which seemed to be thriving in their sunny new home. I had a theory that each one represented some milestone she'd achieved in her career. I was curious to take inventory. Sure enough, there was a new addition, a handsome ceramic pot decorated with Mandarin calligraphy, which I couldn't read, that held 6 or 8 slender shoots, each one shaped like a chunky golf club. Cobra lilies. A fitting choice for her ascent to CEO of Build a Dragon. They even looked a little like dragon heads. Evelyn hurried in, juggling her tablet and a bunch of papers, and saw me inspecting them. "What do you think?"
"About the office, the view, or the cobra lilies?" She laughed.
"All three."
"Nice. Very nice. And I thought they were illegal."
"Buying and selling cobra lilies is illegal. Owning them is not."
That was a convenient loophole if I'd ever heard one. "Possession is 9/10 of the law," I said.
"So it is.
Speaking of which, what's our plan to repossess Wong?"
"There are 2 steps, she said. "First, we find out what they want, and second, we figure out a way to give it to them."
"What if they want something we don't have?" I knew Evelyn had contacts with the U.S. government, but if China wanted a prisoner released or something, that was beyond even her power.
"Let's hope it does not come to that."
"So what do you want me to do? Sit here, stay quiet, try not to insult anyone?"
"I've been thinking about this, and I wonder if you should do the opposite."
"Really?"
"They are not expecting you on the call, so we will introduce you as Wong's immediate supervisor. Feel free to unleash your
inner..." She trailed off. "Ignorant white man," I offered.
"Your words, not mine."
"Well then," I grinned, "I can do that."
"I knew I could count on you."
She was already opening a new projection monitor in midair to initiate the call. The window didn't expand the way I expected for a video feed. It remained wide and narrow, even though I couldn't see what Evelyn could on her side. I knew it was audio only. "No video?"
"They prefer it that way."
"Who are we speaking to, anyway?"
"Someone at the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs."
The call connected a moment later. I recognized the greeting of whoever answered on the other end, but the Mandarin between them and Evelyn that followed was so fast that I didn't catch a word. It reminded me that I was a long way from speaking the language with any kind of proficiency. There was a pause, and Evelyn made a flicking gesture to put her microphone on mute.
"We're being connected to someone high up," she whispered. "A deputy minister."
"Is that unexpected?" I pulled up my tablet and ran a quick search. There were 2 possible names. Both were surprisingly high in the organizational chart of the Chinese government. A man's voice spoke to us. Evelyn replied, and I recognized an extremely polite request to speak English. Thank God.
"Of course," he said.
"Minister, I'm here with Dr. Noah Parker, who is Wong's immediate supervisor," she said.
"Hello, Dr. Parker."
I fought the instinct to reply with the correct Mandarin response to an introduction. I even knew the polite version. Instead, I cleared my throat and kept my tone neutral. "Nice to meet you."
"We are familiar with your work on biological simulation."
A deputy minister knows about my work. Somehow, that was both flattering and terrifying.
"Oh, wow. And your brother's gene therapy, of course. What a story."
So that could easily be a compliment or a threat. Evelyn's face didn't clue me in to which it was, but I remembered her advice.
"I'm happy to say that he's doing well, thank you." "And Dr. Cheng, of course. We have watched your career with great interest."
I smiled in private amusement at the unintentional Star Wars reference.
Or was it intentional? You are too kind, Minister, Evelyn said.
What you have done at the Build-A-Dragon Company over the past year is truly remarkable, he said. I have a personal interest in dragons, as do many Chinese.
Evelyn's eyes narrowed like a hawk that had spotted a mouse. Yes, it is unfortunate that ordinary citizens can't buy them.
Oh, beautifully played.
China had an import ban on our dragons, which was a bummer because the market was huge. This guy worked in the ministry that had implemented the import ban, just as they'd implemented Wong's exit ban.
Well, we must be cautious about foreign technology, he said.
Our dragons are infertile by design, Evelyn said. We have numerous safety studies, which I'd be happy to share.
Perhaps if we understood more about the underlying technology, the minister said.
The dragon genome is public domain, Evelyn said. He paused.
It's my understanding that the genome itself is more of a blueprint. Going from that to a living organism is more challenging.
Of course, Evelyn said. I admired how she limited herself to those two words, which themselves could carry more than one meaning. Now the conversational ball was in his court.
Our laboratories in Shenzhen have managed to perfect much, but not all of the process.
But not all of it, because you don't have Simon Redwood. The Redwood Codex was the heart of our biological printer, and a closely guarded secret. Also a possible fire hazard, based on its appearance. But the ugly jumble of wires and circuits somehow rendered our dragon eggs viable. It was why our company had succeeded where so many other would-be purveyors of synthetic organisms failed. It's difficult work, Evelyn said.
Perhaps there are insights that you could offer, in the spirit of international cooperation.
Oh, hell no. They wanted to duplicate our confidential processes to produce their own organisms. This was what they wanted, and it was exactly what I'd worried about, something we were unable to give. Unfortunately, some of the process is proprietary.
I see.
Now he was using two words, and again they could carry multiple meanings, at least one of which was, you're not getting Wong back. Evelyn sighed, which told me this was going about as poorly as I thought it was. There was no way we'd give out trade secrets, no matter how much we wanted Wong back. Which sucked. So many of my plans for dragon designs relied on him, on his dauntless work ethic. That gave me an idea. I should probably have cleared it with Evelyn first, but that wasn't what an overconfident white man would do. I leaned forward. However, since you do have an interest, it would be our pleasure to send you one of our dragons as a gift. Evelyn smiled at me, which I took to mean that I hadn't overstepped. The minister paused.
To me? Personally?
In the spirit of international cooperation, I said. He was silent a moment while Evelyn and I waited on tenterhooks.
What kind of dragon?
A custom model, so it would be one of a kind. I'd design it myself.
Could it be black and red?
We can do that.
I would appreciate that very much, he said.
I pumped a fist. It would take a couple of weeks to print the egg and get it to Beijing, but this was something. Evelyn gave me a thumbs up. Well, I'm certain we've already taken enough of your time, Minister. They said goodbye, and the call ended. Evelyn leaned back in her chair and exhaled heavily. Well, that was interesting, I said. Good idea on sending him a gift. I spread out my hands.
Dragon diplomacy,
she laughed. Our version of panda diplomacy.
Do you think it will be enough to get Wong back?
Her brow furrowed. Let's hope so.
Chapter 3. The Promise. As much as I wanted to tackle the Chinese dragon design, it was already well past quitting time by the time I got back to the design lab. Well, my quitting time, at least. It was the busy season at Summer's architecture firm, so I wouldn't get to see her until the weekend. I climbed into the Tesla and enjoyed the fact that it, too, kept me ensconced in Napa leather.
"Good evening, Noah Parker," said the car.
"Hello, beautiful." I took a deep breath. "Let's go to Mom's house." I let the autopilot take over. As we circled our way to the exit of the parking garage, I noticed how many spots were empty. Granted, it was later in the day than I usually left, but the wide-open spaces reminded me of the hatchery with its mostly dark pods. Maybe people at Build-A-Dragon had lost some of their dedication to the work, or lost their work, period. Either was possible given the bad publicity and sales outlook. I shook my head, determined to avoid negative thoughts. Despite the apparent lull at Build-A-Dragon, traffic getting out of Scottsdale lived up to its reputation. Thus, it was pushing dinner time by the time I reached Mom's house. I expected to park in my usual spot out front between the mailbox and the neighbor's driveway. I still laid claim to that spot, at least in my mind, even though I'd moved out years ago. Unfortunately, it was occupied by the time I got there. By a black Tesla Model 3 that was so new it practically sparkled.
"You've got to be kidding me."
There were no other options, so I had to turn around and park across the street like a relative from out of town. I armed the highest security setting as soon as I closed my door.
"Security system armed," said the car.
"Damn right." I crossed the street to get a good look at the rival Tesla that had dared take my spot. There was a custom Arizona plate on the back. Seaworthy. "Oh, hell no," I muttered. Sure enough, the front door opened to reveal the grinning mug of my younger brother, Connor.
"Incapacitated," he said in greeting.
"Sea cucumber." I jerked a thumb over my shoulder. "Someone parked in my spot." He put on a furrowed brow as if confused.
"It's almost like you've been entirely replaced with a new version."
"Don't worry, I keyed it up pretty good." His composure broke.
"Oh man, don't even joke. It's a lease."
I groaned. "Thought you weren't allowed to drive."
"My doctor signed off last week."
He gestured at his legs. And then it hit me. He was standing there, without a walker or even a cane, for the first time in, I couldn't remember how long. The gene therapy was working. If his doctor had really signed off, it meant he'd retained his nerve sensory abilities. He moved back to let me in. I marched past him, muttering,
"Let's go, Seaworthy." "You like that, huh?" I almost threw up in my Tesla.
We walked into the too warm interior. Mom liked to keep the temperature a firm 3 degrees above ambient. And the nostalgia flooded over me. The rooms, the furniture, even the smell of roast beef and mashed potatoes wafting in from the kitchen. No matter how irritating my brother could be, the food here was worth it.
"Hi, sweetie."
Mom came around the kitchen island and hugged me.
"Hey, Mom."
I tried unsuccessfully to avoid a kiss on the mouth. Her breath smelled only faintly of wine, which I took for a good thing. She'd prepared the Parker Special, which was a nod to our Irish roots, peas alongside the beef and potatoes. We squeezed around the little square table that occupied most of Mom's kitchen space.
"How was it today?"
Mom asked.
"A little strange," I admitted.
I was half tempted to tell them about losing virtually the entire design team. It wasn't my fault, not directly at least, but it felt vaguely embarrassing. I settled for a vague truth.
"Lots of people are out right now."
Mom raised her eyebrows.
"I imagine so."
"What does that mean?"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?